and welcome to the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. It's Tuesday, March 22nd, and we're actually going to start with a public hearing on our first, this is our first House bill, I think. And we have the House Bill 2189 up, and we have Representative Bentz who's going to come up and introduce it. So with that, I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2189. Welcome, Representative Bentz. Thanks for being here to introduce your bill.
It's
always a pleasure.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Cliff Bentz, House District 60, which of course is far eastern Oregon. This bill, 2189, was actually suggested by the Department of State Lands in response to the floods that occurred in part of my district up by Halfway and Richland last June. And it was an unusual time of the year for floods, but they were very, very damaging and hugely destructive. And flashed down through the valleys and washed out all kinds of roads and ditches. And so as the irrigation season was well underway, many of the folks, once the floodwaters had receded, found that their ditches had been washed away, and in fact the streams had actually moved away from the point where the diversion points used to be. So they also found that they needed to go to the Department of State Lands and ask for a fill and removal permit to put the very ditches they'd had a week earlier back. The director, Louis Saladay, suggested to me that this was a step that was not necessary and recommended the language you now see in House Bill 2189. So working with her, we put this bill together. I'm happy to say that it passed through the House unanimously. The concept, of course, is that if the stream moves, you can put your ditch back without having to go through the process of getting a permit. And that is how simple the bill is. I think that's why it passed unanimously. So I very much appreciate your support of the bill. And believe it or not, lots of feedback in my newsletter about this bill from Richland and Halfway in particular. So,
well, I would imagine. Well, thank you for bringing this forward. I actually was, I'm assuming the east side of the Wallowas is in your district. Is that in your district
it
as
is.
Well?
Uh-huh.
So I was there last summer, and I did see the damage firsthand, and I am saddened with that it damaged one of my favorite roads to cycle on, because I cycled on that road from Halfway to Wallowa Lake on Cycle Oregon several years back, and so I know that that road is was severely damaged, and certainly know that this is an important bill for your district.
Yes.
Any questions for the representative?
I have one. Representative, are there any exceptions to this rule?
I think I have to look at the actual language in the bill. I think the idea is that if you don't have a water right, and if you, in other words, if you hadn't had the right to divert the water previously, then you, of course, wouldn't give you the right to avoid that kind of opportunity.
It has to be a pre-existing water right.
So I think there would be an exception unless you had that water right.
Thank you.
And we can ask, the department is going to come up, so we'll make sure and ask Bill Ryan as well to confirm that. So, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, I'll ask Bill Ryan to come up from State Lands.
Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bill Ryan. I'm the Assistant Director of the Wetlands and Waterways Conservation Division for the Department of State Lands, and I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2189. As Representative Bentz said, this is a bill that we proposed following the flooding in eastern Oregon last summer. In working with the landowners to address their needs, it became apparent to us that there was a sort of a gap in some of the exemptions that were currently in the removal fill law to address the specific situation of where a waterway diversion needed to be relocated because of the migration of the channel, the stream that diversion was coming from. And so, we realized that we could fill that gap without compromising the water resources of the state and allow that ongoing use, which really does to address that previous question from Senator Olson. It really is. It's only four waterway diversions that are already permitted by the Water Resources Department. So it's just a matter of an existing diversion that needs to be relocated because of the migration of a channel. In certain parts of the state, channels tend to migrate more than in others, and in eastern Oregon, in that particular area, there's a lot of migration because of the topography and the hydrogeomorphology of the area. So the current exemptions in the removal fill law don't cover that specific situation. We've got an exemption for constructing, operating, and maintaining dams, but it covers fill only, and that's really for constructing new dams. So it doesn't cover the situation of removal, say, extending a ditch. And then there's another exemption for maintenance or reconstruction of a water control structure, but it doesn't address relocation. It's a maintenance of an existing structure in the same location. So the proposed legislation provides a clear exemption for that specific situation. There's little potential for adverse effect to waters of the state. The activities have already been covered, already permitted. It's really just an adjustment due to a change in the stream location. The fiscal impact would be minimal. We do less than 10 of these types of projects per year. Usually it's actually far fewer, and there are very small volumes involved with most of these activities, so we'd be talking very minimal permitting fees as well, you know, in the range of $85 to $250 per permit. So very minimal fiscal impact. So in summary, the legislation would reduce illegal burdens without compromising the water resources protection, and so it would have negligible fiscal impacts to the department. So thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Okay, great. Is there any questions for the Department of State Lands? Okay. All right. Thank you very much. And I know we also have the Water Resources Department here. If there's any questions for the Water Resources Department, if not, I'm not inclined to call up the department unless there are questions. Seeing none, the last person up is Katie Fast. I didn't see you back there, Katie. I thought maybe you were hiding from us.
Maybe I was. Senator Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. I'd like to add Farm Bureau support to House Bill 2189. I think Representative Benz and Mr. Ryan did a good job explaining the legislation. I would just add that in regards to a farmer or a rancher's ability to irrigate, that many times is their livelihood in growing their crop for that year. And so this would allow those farmers or ranchers that are impacted by a change in the channel to be able to get out and make those extensions or movements of their diversion point in a timely manner so that they can get water onto the needed crops in the most efficient manner and in timely manner as possible so they can finish out their grazing season. And I'm happy to answer any questions and ask you to move the bill.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Fast?
Thank you.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Anybody else that would like to testify on House Bill 2189? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2189. And actually, this bill, I think we have a fiscal for this. Is that right, Beth?
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members.
Hold on. So I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2189.
Madam Chair and committee members, for the record, you have a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. No statement was issued on the House Bill 2189.
Okay, so I will accept a motion. My vice chair, you think you can? This is a test.
This is a test.
So we'll work with you.
Madam Chair,
we don't have a script. Yeah.
I move that. I'm doing this wrong.
That's okay. You move it. House Bill.
I move House Bill 2189.
This is going to the floor.
Going to the floor as a due pass recommendation.
Okay, so Senator Olson moves House Bill 2189 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on this bill? Okay, so the clerk will call the roll, please.
Senator Hatch.
Aye.
Senator Prezoff.
Aye.
Senator Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Senator Dean.
Aye. Thank you. The bill passes. No objections. And do we have any volunteers for carrying the bill today? Oh, I see a volunteer down the end. Senator Thompson is volunteering. Excellent. So Senator Thompson will carry the bill. And with that, the work session on House Bill 2189 is closed. Good job. Okay, next one. I know we were waiting for Representative McLean, who's here. So we'll go ahead with House Bill 2122, and I'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 2122. Beth, if you can provide an overview. And you'll see in your packet that we have several amendments, and Representative McLean is also here to talk about yet another amendment.
Madam Chair, committee members, House Bill 2122 prohibits the importation of untreated firewood into Oregon and the sale of unlabeled firewood in Oregon. It requires the Department of Agriculture to adopt rules regulating importation, supply, and sale of firewood. It imposes a maximum civil penalty of $10,000 for a violation of statute or regulation. And it declares an emergency effective on passage.
Okay, great. And Representative, can you hold on for a minute while I have the department come up and first tell us why we need this bill? And then you can come talk about your amendment. So we can have Dan Hilburn and Lisa up. First, we want to know why this bill is in front of us, and then we'll talk about the fix that we have. And this came over with, what was the vote in the House again?
The vote was 36 ayes, 21 nays.
Okay. Okay. Great. Thanks, Dan.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Dan Hilburn. I'm administrator of the Plant Division for the Oregon Department of Agriculture and also a founding member of the Oregon Invasive Species Council, so I'm wearing two hats today. I have 4 points that I'd like to make. The first one is that firewood is a real vector for invasive species, and we're just becoming aware of this in the last few years. But as things like emerald ash borer, Asian longhorn beetle, sudden oak death, and other invasive species have been introduced to this continent, firewood turns out to be one of the ways that they are spreading quickly around the country. So somebody that has ash trees that are dying in the middle part of the country, when it dies, they cut it up, turn it into firewood, and they come camping in the West. They bring their firewood with them. That's a problem, and that's how they could spread out here quickly. So there's a number of these invasive species around the country. The good thing is that Oregon doesn't have any of them yet, of the bad ones, except for a little bit of Curry County, which has sudden oak death. So we'd like to keep it that way. We'd like to protect the forests that we have here. We think this bill is a win-win for protecting Oregon's trees and at the same time encouraging folks to use Oregon forest products in the local firewood. So this bill really looks at firewood as coming from two different risk cups. One of them, the high-risk firewood is stuff that's coming from outside the Northwest. So commercial firewood now has moved literally around the world. It's hard to believe, but this country imports firewood from overseas, and there's firewood for sale in the state of Oregon right now that comes from outside the Pacific Northwest. That's high risk. That's what the bill is designed to address. There's low-risk firewood, which is cut locally within the Northwest, within Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and we're trying to make it as easy as possible for folks to use the local firewood. That's what we want people to use. If you are going to bring in wood from outside the Northwest, we'd like you to treat it so it doesn't have bugs in it and label it so we know where it's coming from. That's the intent of the bill. A good chunk of the bill, if you look at it, has to do with record keeping. And that's important because we have to be able to distinguish where the wood is coming from, whether it's coming from a low-risk source or a high-risk source. So we're trying to be very open as to how people keep records, but we want people that are in the commercial business of selling firewood to keep enough records that we could tell whether they're bringing it in from someplace outside the Northwest or whether it's being cut locally. And then one last comment that I'd like to make is that the details of the treatment and the labeling and the how to deal with local situations would be handled with a rulemaking committee, and we would hope to make that as easy as possible for people who are buying and selling local firewood to continue doing what they're doing, because that's what we would want people to do. So that's the department's point of view. As a somebody that deals with invasive species and the insect realm, this is an important bill, and I think you should pass it. We need this protection, and we need it soon. We had a case this past summer with a camper from Michigan bringing their own firewood and being stopped at the California border station after camping in Oregon with their own firewood from dead trees in Michigan. So it's a real problem, and it's happening now. Thank you.
Did you want to add anything?
I do. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Lisa Deberker. I'm the Oregon Invasive Species Council Coordinator. When our council first started hearing about the issue of firewood, we launched a tri-state outreach campaign with Washington and Idaho with a grant from USDA APHIS. And for the last year and throughout this summer, we'll be continuing that outreach campaign to educate Oregonians about the dangers of moving firewood. When we first started on this project, we drafted the first iteration of this bill after legislation that was being passed in other states in the United States. So we were looking at what was going on nationally. We were also looking at what USDA APHIS was proposing nationally, which was national legislation to prevent the interstate transport of firewood unless that wood has been treated. So that's how this process sort of started. As we've moved through the process and we've engaged with a variety of stakeholders, including legislators on the House committee, we started dealing with issues and concerns. For example, a homeowner in the Dalles that might want to purchase wood across the river, Columbia River, in Washington. We didn't want this interstate legislation to really affect that because we aren't worried about wood coming in from the state of Washington. So we've addressed that. We have addressed that with some of the Dash 4 amendments. In addition to that, we didn't want to affect small Oregon businesses or Oregon businesses that depend greatly on firewood sales. And so we engaged with a number of Oregon firewood sellers, including the second largest Portland retailer in the state, whose family has been in business for 92 years. They get all of their wood. It's sourced from Longview, Washington. So we wanted to be sure whatever legislation we were proposing be passed did not detrimentally affect Oregon businesses. And so these Dash 4 amendments reflect that. So this bill basically does a couple things. It allows for the movement of firewood into and within Oregon from the Pacific Northwest without it being treated or labeled or records, anything like that. But anybody who sells firewood or any entity that sells firewood must provide some basic level of record keeping. We just need to know where the wood came from and where it ended up. And so it could be done through a map that a landowner keeps of his own property. It could be done through a state park map if that state park gets their wood from their own property, or it could be basic business records that any business might keep. What we didn't want to do when we proposed this legislation was add this huge layer of bureaucracy in record keeping, either to the state or to any private business. And so the labeling and the record keeping is for sellers of firewood, and we've tried to minimize that to the degree possible. And so it is for anybody. Treatment is required for anybody that brings wood in from outside the Pacific Northwest, and labeling is required for that as well. And then only record keeping is required for people that sell wood within the state of Oregon, regardless of its source. We have worked with a lot of stakeholders. You have letters of support from the West Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District, the Oregon Department of Forestry, the Northwest Guides and Anglers Association, the Clackamas Soil and Water Conservation District, the Northwest Weed Management Partnership, Mount Scott Fuel Company, and the Oregon Woodland Cooperative. In addition to that, we've engaged with the Oregon Forest Industries Council and the Associated Oregon Loggers. So we've tried to engage with as many levels of firewood stakeholders in the state, and as somebody who used to manage Oregon State Forests, I can tell you that our firewood industry is very decentralized in our state, so we don't have any one entity that represents firewood sellers. So it's been a work in progress to get out there and try to make sure we've reached out to as many stakeholders as possible to do the right thing.
All right. Given that, I know that my vice chair has a question, and then we'll take some other questions.
Yes. Is it typical that the civil penalty would go into a specific fund rather than into the general fund?
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, I don't know the answer to that. I'll find out and get back to you.
Well, I didn't know either. That's why I asked.
I was going to say, sometimes we do, and so, Lisa, why don't you come on up? I think this is more appropriate for the assistant director. The question was why this is not going into the general fund, but it's going into the invasive species account. So Lisa is here to answer the question.
For the record, Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. Madam Chair, Vice Chair Olson, within the Department of Agriculture, we have many programs that have civil penalty authority, and it is very typical in those programs that the money goes back into the programmatic funds. Typically, they're targeted for education and outreach and not used for enforcement.
All right, thank you. I do have another question, which is how practically you are going to enforce this. Is it working directly with the retailers, the bundlers, the people who are harvesting firewood, and also getting the word out? Obviously, we don't have inspection stations yet, so I'd like to hear a little bit about how the department intends to enforce this.
Sure. Chair Dingfelder, excellent question, and something we've talked a lot about. This is really an outreach and education program. If you haven't already guessed that, it's all about getting Oregonians to know that when they're buying firewood, the local stuff is low risk, and they should buy it, and not to pack firewood with you when you go camping somewhere at a distance. So it's really an outreach and education program. But the folks that are experts in outreach and education tell us if they really need something to a message to tell people, you know, what are the rules? What do you want people to do? And so the rules here are to set what would be the boundaries then, and then you put the outreach and education on top of that. What enforcement there would be through folks that are already doing inspections. We would not have additional firewood police, but we do have people that are around the state and going to campgrounds, setting up gypsy moth traps, that kind of thing. So on the way, they would be looking, seeing where the firewood's coming from. So it's kind of a casual enforcement.
Okay, I think my vice chair has another question.
One short question. The final and a point you just made. I just hauled some firewood from Florence to Canby. Would I be liable to be stopped and interrogated or asked where that came from, or would I have difficulty, or would I have to prove where it came from?
Chair Dingfelder and Senator Olson, I don't think so, unless you are selling it.
Okay.
If you put up a sign in your yard and you're selling it, then that's when I think there would be a trigger that somebody might check on where you're getting your firewood to make sure that it meets all the requirements. So, but for personal use, from one part of the state to another, one part of the Northwest to another, no.
Chair Dingfelder, if I might add just one comment on the first question that you had. Mm-hmm. Our outreach is really to the other states as well, and it's to let people know we don't want commercial firewood coming into the state of Oregon from outside the Pacific Northwest. So our messages are to Oregonians, but a key part of our message is to everybody else in the United States and foreign countries. Don't bring wood into the state of Oregon unless it's been heat-treated.
Senator?
Yeah, I do believe there's still in the statutes when you're transporting firewood that you're supposed to have it tagged, especially if you're taking off someone else's land, that you have permission and all that. I don't know. I don't see it being enforced, but at least that was on the books.
Well, and I realize this is going to be tough. You're going to have people coming into the state who obviously didn't know, so they're not knowingly bringing in untreated firewood. I don't know if that came up on the House side at all, because when you go to, I mean, somebody's going to say, wow, you know, I'm going to get and I know the fine's up to $10,000, but whatever the typical fine's going to be, they're going to say, well, I didn't know. So I'm assuming you're going to give out, if somebody has, I don't know if you're planning to give out warnings first to people, their first-time offense, or because I'm assuming we're going to need a lot of people don't know. One suggestion that I have is, and you probably already have thought of this, but since we were sitting hearing the parks budget earlier this afternoon, and a lot of people that come here from out of state, they make reservations online through the parks, state parks, that it should be on their website, very clearly labeled that you cannot bring firewood in, you know, to our state parks. And so I would certainly encourage you to work with state parks on that, because I would imagine we get a lot of people, you know, on the coastal parks, a lot of people from California are coming up in their RVs, and it would probably be a natural thing for people to bring it, or down from British Columbia, whatever. So I would encourage you to work with parks, because I think that would be one way to get the word out.
And Chair Dingfelder, we have done that in the last year. So anytime you make a state parks reservation, a big sign pops up at the top of the screen that says don't move firewood with an explanation. In addition to that, we've worked with every federal agency in the state of Oregon that manages campgrounds. And anytime you go to reservations.gov, which is the federal campground reservation website, and you try to make a reservation at a federal campsite, a big message pops up and it's printed on your receipt.
Okay, good. That's good to know. All right. Any other questions before we have the representative come up and talk about the amendment? Okay. And stay by because there may be some other questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative McLean, is our resident firewood expert now.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike McLean. I represent House District 55 in the House of Representatives. When this bill came to the floor, one of the questions that came up in discussions of House Bill 2122 was that it prescribed or was going to subject to regulation the sale of firewood that was gathered in state and sold in state. And I have a lot of people in my district that pay tuition at COCC. And when I say a lot of people, I mean a handful that I know of, but I know there's others that earn money going up into the national forest subject to permits or on private ground and gathering wood, selling that firewood to people. And they do it sometimes all within the confines of Crook County, sometimes within Crook selling into the rich people in Bend. But, you know, now that we've got a lot of national forest land that is not subject to logging, and we have a lot of private forest land that has been a decline of demand, there's a lot of thinning going on and other type of harvest where people come in and actually make money and selling firewood. So I was pretty sensitive to this. My county has the highest unemployment in the state of Oregon, and that's been the way for almost 3 years now. And besides folks earning tuition at COCC, some folks are putting food on the table selling firewood. Now, I understand from the Department of Agriculture that that was not their intent, to prohibit citizens of the state of Oregon from cutting up firewood and selling it in the state of Oregon. So I asked the carriers of the bill at that time if they would help me get an amendment over here, and I agreed that I would shepherd this process. You have before you, I believe, Amendment Dash 4, which after a series of reviews is produced a draft that I think is almost there in this regard. It describes in sections in this amendment, sections 2 and 3 under the main section, that you can transfer, meaning you can transport firewood as long as the firewood's been cut in the Northwest, Idaho, Washington, Oregon. And it also says now that you can sell the firewood as long as it's harvested and sold in the Northwest. And so that sort of met my criteria for a bill that I think can be supported. But I have submitted to Ms. Herzog and to the chair the my handwritten edits, as well as I submitted to Beth by email, that perhaps the word quarantine was left out inadvertent, because I also represent one of the worst conditions of invasive species in a national forest. In Lake County, which I am privileged to represent, has what they call the red zone in the Fremont National Forest, which has been an enormous beetle kill. So there clearly needs to be work done to make sure that the national forest and all this private forest land that so many of us represent is protected. So in the amendments that to Dash 4 that I have handwritten in and sent in by email would return to that word quarantine. And that's a very butchered way to say that you could, under Dash 4 amendment plus my addition, you could sell firewood in the state of Oregon that you got in the state of Oregon or Washington or Idaho, provided that you didn't get it from a place that's quarantined. Because we do want to give the Department of Agriculture the authority to quarantine. Because if we had an outbreak or there was something that slipped through the cracks and started to go, we want to be able to lock that down to protect what is an enormous resource in Oregon. So I don't know if the Dash 4 amendments that the department or that legislative council submitted, I think they may have inadvertently omitted the word quarantine. So I have submitted that to you and would say that this bill should allow the transportation and sale. And perhaps the department, when he said that, for an example, if Senator Olson transported wood from Florence to his home in Canby, if you used it for personal use, okay. But if you transported it and sold it, they would say it was not okay. I don't agree with that. It needs to be okay. If you're selling firewood because you're a young man or woman making your way through college, or you're a dad trying to put some cash into your pocket so you can provide for your family, if you're harvesting wood in the state of Oregon and you're selling that wood to customers in the state of Oregon, I don't believe for a second that should be regulated. Unless it's a quarantine zone, unless Florence somehow had an invasive species and we got to say lock down Florence area, and then, you know, then we need to all stand back. That was my problem with the bill. I did not believe that House Bill 2122 was clear that you can harvest firewood and sell it in the state of Oregon. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. I know I have
we have
had a robust conversation with Beth and the chair about amendments, but I feel very strongly, and I know that there's a lot of members of the House that feel strongly as well. We sure want people being able to go up, gather firewood, and be able to sell it if that's how they're putting food on the table.
Thank you, Representative. We have your comment, and we will be meeting with the Department of Agriculture to go over the suggestions. I've asked that they get back to us with their comments on that. Questions?
Yeah, just a quick note to that, and I'm sure it's along the same line you're saying. Let's say they're cutting wood in your county, and your county's quarantined. They can't, if it's quarantined, they can't take it to another county and sell it, but they could sell it in your county. Okay, if it was quarantined in your county, is it okay to sell it in your county, within your county? That would be my question.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Thompson, my suggested changes to the Dash 4 amendments, I would say that if it's quarantine, it's quarantine. In other words, you wouldn't be able to do that. If we've got an invasive species in some county in Oregon, you know, and the department has gone in and said, hey, this is bad, we need to quarantine this area, then it's off limits. We don't want that wood being out of the quarantine area, so I would not distinguish it by county. I would distinguish it by quarantine area. If it's not quarantined, then people can harvest it and sell it.
Okay. Other questions? Senator, I
want to make a statement. Ms. Hansen kind of gave me that eye look when I made my statement, so that told me I had to go look at the law books. So, Senator Olson, if you would not need to have any type of proof that you were moving that wood from Florence to Canby unless you had 5 tree loads.
Okay.
Thank you for
the pickup truck is safe.
Pickup truck is safe. Thank you, Representative.
Madam
we'll
Chair.
Keep you posted as we meet with the department to talk about these proposed changes to the Dash 4 amendment. So stay tuned for the next iteration.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Right.
Thank you. And we have a couple more folks who would like to testify on this bill. Rex Storm from the Association of Oregon Loggers and Alex Kyler And is there anyone else that would like to testify in House Bill 2122? Okay. Thank you.
I urge you, Alex, to bring his assistant up with him, too.
There's a story there. Okay, Mr. Chair Storm, why don't you go ahead and start?
And committee members, for the record, my name is Rex Storm. I'm a forester with Associated Oregon Loggers, and we are a statewide trade group representing 1,000 member companies. And these companies are engaged in a full range of forestry contract services, including harvest and transportation, reforestation, and so forth, and in woods manufacture of special forest products such as firewood. I am here today to support House Bill 2122-4 amendments. However, we do oppose House Bill 2122 as it was passed by the House, and we urge you to take the necessary action to replace that introduced bill with the dash 4 version. Although we do agree with the concept of limiting the unwanted spread of invasive species from the eastern and midwestern United States, we are very reluctant to burden private businesses and agencies with the proposed firewood trade prohibition and the proposed record keeping and the enforcement costs. Even though we are very reluctant, we feel at this time that the intent of the Department of Agriculture is balanced with the need for action over this invasive species issue. And they have balanced this in a way that can minimize the costs. After recent discussions with the Department of Ag and Invasive Species Council representatives last week, we agreed to the Dash 4 amendments in those concepts. And I am confident that our association would be included in subsequent rulemaking if this bill does indeed become law. The proposed prohibition on interstate trade of a single forest product such as firewood is a costly means to achieve this control of invasive species. So we must act carefully. If this bill becomes law, it is my intent to work with the Department of Agriculture and the Invasive Species Council to make sure that the results are fair and balanced. On the second page of my written testimony, I did have a list of the reasons why we opposed the initial House bill that passed the House, but I won't go into all of those because I'm satisfied that we can work through the remainder of those issues during rulemaking. Thank you for your consideration.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Storm. And I looked at in the House, it passed out of committee 8-0. So did you testify on the House side about these concerns?
No, I did not.
Okay, and it just
we were not involved in any of the interactions with the Department of Agriculture or with the House interactions.
Okay. All right, thank you. Alex?
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder. I'm Alex Kyler. I am the Intergovernmental Relations Manager for Lane County. And this bill came to our attention as a result of comments from our parks director, who was concerned that Lane County actually does operate several campgrounds. Some of them are sizable enough where we generate our own firewood from those campgrounds, and we didn't want to have to be labeling the firewood that we generated from our lands, nor have to maintain the records required under the base bill, House Bill 2122. We did go to work with the Department of Ag and the Invasive Species Council to seek an amendment, which we did generate as a Dash 2 amendment. Subsequent to further conversations, the Dash 3s and 4, and ultimately the 4s got generated. We're really quite good with the 4s. They do keep the county campground, for instance, would not have to label each bundle of firewood or the bulk bin of firewood. We're a little concerned still that we would have to maintain records to prove that the legislation does not affect us. So we were really seeking sort of the exemption for the situation where the campground cuts its own firewood, unless, and to the previous or to the representative's testimony, unless, of course, that land were under quarantine. So if there is subsequent conversations that will still occur, the record-keeping piece would be nice to eliminate for people, for campgrounds that generate their own firewood on site. It seems a little bit burdensome to have to maintain records to prove a negative for a bill that is only meant to apply to firewood coming from outside the Pacific Northwest region as defined in the bill. So thanks very much.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
I do have one.
Hold on.
Mr. Kyler, does the dash 4 have in there that you need? Because I just got the dash 4 right now. Does the dash 4 have in there that you, as a campground, have to maintain these records? Or would you like that added that there would be you wouldn't have to?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, if you look on page 2 of the bill.
It's right here.
Line 16, so persons that sell firewood in this state, and then if you look back up to subsection 4A, the following person shall maintain records, certificates, or other documents as required by the department, and then go down to the big C, persons that sell firewood in this state, and then it goes on to discuss what those records should be. I could see, for instance, perhaps there's a way at line 16 to say persons that sell firewood in this state, unless that firewood is,
okay. Well, what we're going to do is, obviously, this bill still needs some more work. So I will be asking the Department of Agriculture to work with Beth Herzog. Since this came from her committee in the House, I thought it would be good to have Beth continue working on this, since for some reason none of these issues came up in the House side. So we'll make sure that the Department of Ag, maybe we'll ask them to pull together some of the folks that have concerns, and we'll see what the next iteration looks like.
And Chair Dingfelder, if I could just add that both Beths have been really terrific to work with on this measure. I think we just got this morning, so appreciate the effort.
Yeah, we appreciate our Beth duo very much. Thank you for your testimony. And unless anybody else wants to testify.
Can I have the department come up?
Sure. I think there's a request for the department to come back up. You have another question, Senator?
Just one more.
Sure.
I'm not real sure on maybe some of the last from Representative McLean brought up. Do you foresee, is there a county right now that has any of these problems in it in the state of Oregon?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Thompson, the corner of Curry County that has sudden oak death in it has a quarantine on it. That's the only one that would be part of a firewood issue.
Okay. So, follow up, please. So if there's a quarantine in a small part of Curry County and somebody wants to go into that area, would it be written that they can't cut firewood in there, or that they could cut firewood out of there and sell it within that small area, or would you do it by county? How would you set that up? Because I'm sure there's people in that area that want to cut firewood too and sell it.
Sure. Yeah. Senator Dingfelder, Senator Thompson. Yes. The reason the quarantine language was taken out of the bill is it seemed to be confusing to people. And so we have authority to do quarantines separately in other legislation, and quarantines are done as administrative rules. So depending on the place and the commodities covered by the quarantine, firewood may or may not be part of any quarantine. If it's a forest pest that could be transmitted by firewood, then it would be part of a quarantine. But that can be handled as a separate rule. That's how it is now. So that's why it's not in this bill. I don't object to putting it back in the bill if folks think it would help with clarity. But it's not needed because that we have authority to do that now.
So what I'm going to ask you to do, and I've asked Beth to do, we're going to have a little mini work group.
Sure.
With the parties that we've heard from here today that have some concerns. We've heard from the county. We've heard Representative McLean still has some concerns. And then from the Associated Oregon Loggers. So I'm going to ask you, if you could staff that work group, Beth will be setting it up, and it sounds like we just need to get everybody in one room and solve this, because this is reminds me of the old adage, you know, about making sausage.
Right.
It seems like a simple idea, but somehow we're just not quite getting there. So with that, unless there are any other comments?
I just have one kind of a,
sure.
This is my first year, and is it customary that the Senate side has to do so much work on a passed House bill? Is this normal?
Well, this is an interesting question, especially because it came out of the committee that Beth staffed, although to her defense, she was not staffing the committee at that time when this bill came out. But I think you'll have to take that up with the chairs of the co-chairs of the committee on the other side. But this is a good example of why we have a bicameral process here, because sometimes it needs a little more vetting over on the other side. So,
I was just kidding.
There was definitely nuggets of truth in there. So any other comments?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll. I know that Beth will look forward to setting that up with you.
And I'll look forward to working with her.
Great. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2122. Set that aside for now, and we have our public hearing on our last bill, Senate Bill 630. Beth, you want to provide an overview, please?
From Chair and committee members, yes, Senate Bill 630 defines energy score and limits the authority of local government to disclose energy score information for building or to require building owner or lessee to disclose information to a person other than the local government. It does not prohibit local government from requiring commercial building owner to disclose energy score information. It does not apply to buildings that have been owned or leased or in whole or part by state or local government.
Okay, and this came over to us from the Judiciary Committee. Was introduced and then passed over to our committee. And we just have two people from BOMA that would like to testify. So we have Susan Stewart and Wade Lang. And if you have any written testimony?
No, I think they have it.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Thank you.
Chair Dingfelder, Senators, thank you. My name is Susan Stewart, obviously, and I am the Executive Director of the Building Owners and Managers Association of Portland, actually of Oregon. I represent over 30 million square feet of commercial space from Vancouver to Eugene, and one of the reasons we're so supportive of this proposal is that a lot of my members have properties in various cities, in various counties, and having different programs, no matter what the issue is, that they are implementing is really time-consuming. It takes staff time. It's very costly. And we strongly support having one program that all of our members can utilize and not muddying up the waters, in a nutshell.
Dash two? Okay. Dash two is on their testimony. We didn't have the dash twos.
Cool.
Yeah, is there a difference between the dash twos and the dash ones? We only had the dash ones.
It clarifies the definition of energy score. Let me see what else does it do.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Bill Cross, and I represent BOMA. And the dash ones came back flawed, so, and they were requested by BOMA. So please ignore those, and the dash twos would be the amendments we would like to submit.
Okay. All right. Sorry. Did you want to, I didn't mean to cut you off. You wanted to add anything?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Wade Lang. I'm Vice President of Ashforth Pacific. We are the largest owner of Class A office buildings in the Central Business District in Portland. And we support this bill as it's written, the dash two amendments. Just the complexity of trying to manage multiple properties in multiple jurisdictions is hard enough without having mandatory energy scoring requirements put on top of that. The cost of doing that and the complexity of doing that really adds a burden to the business that we do day in and day out. So we would hope for support of the bill.
Okay. So we have the dash twos here. Now we have those in the record. Okay, any questions for either of these panelists? I guess not. Okay. All right, thank you. Anybody else that would like to testify on this bill? Senate Bill 630. I will note for the record that the City of Portland has submitted testimony in opposition of this bill. So you should have that in your packet. Okay. All right. Seeing nobody else wants to testify, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 630, and we are done for the day. Gentlemen, I want to note it is not even 4 o'clock yet. So I will close the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, and reminder that we're going to be starting promptly on Thursday because we have Senate Bill 736 up.